This is Whitley Strieber, and this is Dreamland. You've reached the edge of the world.
Linda Moulton Howe is back with us. The last time Linda was on Dreamland, we talked about coming back and doing a show on Antarctica and on her extraordinary new documentary that goes in depth into what is actually going on down there. And there is certainly something going on. We're going to start. That's the baseline. And we're going to be hoping over the course of the interview that Linda can get to exactly what it is. The documentary is very powerful and very well done. It is available on Amazon Prime and on Vimeo, and you really should look at it. It's not a costly thing, and believe me, $4.99 for an evening's entertainment on this level is absolutely worth it. It's called Antarctica: Alien Secrets Beneath the Ice. And there is a huge secret hidden deep beneath Antarctic ice. And that is where we're going to start. Of course, you all know who Linda is. She's been with Dreamland and with Coast since the very beginning. But I always like to run through the old traditional introduction that we have been doing for too long to think about. One reporter who loves mysteries is radio's leading science journalist, Linda Moulton Howe. She's an Emmy Award-winning TV producer, documentary filmmaker, and the reporter and editors for EarthFiles.com, the internet's most respected edge science website. And today she's going to be talking to us about Antarctica. And so here is Linda from Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Thank you, Whitley, and thank you for recognizing the film, because I think that this documentary, Antarctica, Alien Secrets Beneath the Ice, is really one of the most important works that I have ever done, because it is about something that others besides the backlighted Navy SEAL and Marine analysts that I interview in the documentary, who have all kinds of evidentiary material that they have described to me. It is that after I started doing the segments in my Earth Files live stream on Wednesday nights leading up to the final completion of the documentary that is now out in the world on Vimeo and Amazon Prime, I started receiving through FedEx, through encrypted proton mail, other supports from people, one of which I was able to meet at a conference. Conferences are a good way because they kind of cover up if somebody is talking to you, and people who have to worry about what their classifications with the government are, that is one of the safe ways they can approach. And so as we start going deep into the ice of Antarctica, I would like people to know that another SEAL, other military, have approached me to say, that film of yours is telling the truth.
And that truth is what we're going to be exploring today. Linda, when did this first come into your life, the whole issue of Antarctica? I'll tell you when it came into mine. But first, tell us when it came into yours.
All of this started coming into focus for me in 2016 to 2017, when I received one of those. They are always, if they're really, I've come to think, when there is really something here and I better pay attention, it's when somebody says, I have served in the Marines, or I've served in the Navy, or I've served in the Air Force, and I have information that I think you ought to know about. And that started with who I, in the film, call Spartan 2. He served in the Marines. He retired from the Marines in terms of active duty and became what's called an analyst in special ops. And he had grown up with the Navy SEAL Spartan 1. So these were two men who had a bond from childhood One had gone into the Marines. One had gone into the Navy SEALs. And it is Spartan 1, the Navy SEAL, who is at the heart of the eyewitness testimony that we're going to get into. But I also would like to say right here at the top that when I got this contact from the Marine analyst, and it led to another conference, a conference that hid his being there, that covered up his approach, saying, "I am," and gave me the name of the man who was in an email. This is how we met. There was no discussion on the phones about travel. There was no discussions. It was an email, "I have information that you need to know," and then my going to a conference and his leaning forward in a huge group of people around me saying, "I am." And so the very first discussion was without any prelude. There was no possibility of anybody in the government or anywhere else knowing that this man, the Marine, and I would end up in a seven-hour discussion at this conference. And here, cutting into this 7 hours, here is the sentence that I remember vividly that caught my total attention when he said, "I know because I have seen the proof that the same architecture that is deep under the ice of Antarctica is also on Mars and is also on the moon." Now, that led into discussions that went far and wide with a Marine about what he had been exposed to, with him stressing for me that he was not the firsthand eyewitness in Antarctica. It was his longtime childhood friend. They had evolved into military lives, the one talking to me first into the Marines, the friend, the deep friend, bonded from childhood, and then through that unbelievable training that the SEALs have to go through. And that is the man who I call Spartan 1. And the Marine told me, "Linda, you have to be able to talk with, and we'll just continue to call them Spartan 1 and Spartan 2. And he said, he's walked in the hallways and in the rooms deep under the ice in Antarctica, and he can tell you what he has seen with his own eyes, and you need to report that 2 to 3 miles under the ice of Antarctica are huge structures, 80-foot ceilings, a mile or two long hallways." And he said, "Do you, Linda, have any idea when this huge architecture could have been built? When was the last time there was no 2 to 3 miles of ice in Antarctica?" I had no idea sitting there in that first discussion, the very first face-to-face discussion was in April of 2017. And that was when we left from that 7-hour discussion, and he went his way and I went mine on purpose so that we wouldn't even be tied together at the conference. I began to do research, and he began to send me through FedEx, because I gave him my FedEx account number and said, "You can communicate with me safely there." He began sending me information from Spartan 2 as like an intermediary to the eyewitness that he said, "This is who you have to interview." And weeks into months were going by, and I began doing a lot of research about what was the evolutionary history of this big continent at the South Pole. It's as wide as the United States. It's a huge continent.
And Linda, we're going to take a very brief break now. And when we get back, we're going to learn a little bit about this extremely strange place that is at present on the bottom of the Earth, the Antarctic. Linda Moulton Howe's documentary, Antarctica, Alien Secrets Beneath the Ice, well worth your attention. She has touched a nerve here, and it is extraordinary reporting. You can rent it for $5, and believe me, you will not have an experience like this, listening, watching this in any other way whatsoever. We'll be right back, Free Dreamlanders.
OneUnknownCountry.com subscriber says, "The subscriber offering has blossomed into an indispensable tool for my spiritual growth. Unknown Country has revitalized my sense of awe and wonder. I am very happy to participate in this exciting adventure." Listen to what another one has to say.
"I've been a subscriber to Unknown Country from almost the beginning. I get information there I can get nowhere else on the web."
And think of what you get. Commercial-free access to every Dreamland since 2004. Hundreds of special interviews. The Astonishing Meditations of Whitley Strieber. A small collection of UFO videos, but one that is rock-solid authentic, unlike so much you find elsewhere. Plus, the satisfaction of knowing that you support the best edge science website in the world.
Unknown Country, genuinely new, genuinely credible, like nothing else in the world. Subscribe today. We need you. And you'd be surprised. Once you start, you'll realize you need to be a part of this community too. Click on that subscribe tab today.
Every week, over 30,000 people get the free UnknownCountry.com newsletter. Keep up with the latest about some of the world's most amazing stories. News you cannot get elsewhere. Sign up on UnknownCountry.com. We keep all email addresses strictly private. The UnknownCountry.com newsletter. Unique in the world.
EarthFiles.com is Linda Moulton Howe's great website, offering news of the edge of science and reality. Keep up with Linda's work every single day on earthfiles.com.
Now we're back, and Free Dreamlanders, by the way, you will never, Linda's been interviewed about Antarctica by quite a number of people. She's been on Coast, she's been on Jimmy Church, and all kinds of places. But there's only one place where these questions will be asked, because there is only one interviewer who is deep enough into this to actually know what questions to ask Linda. Now, Linda, when we left the air, we were going to go back into the history of Antarctica, what it was like in the distant past when it wasn't covered with ice. So if you could take us there.
Yes. It was almost shocking to me to realize that as we go through school and college and advanced degrees, how little we actually know about the history of our evolving, chaotic, geophysically unstable planet, Earth. And that if you go back far enough, if you get back to, say, 140 million years ago, there was one big landmass called Pangaea, and there was one huge ocean, and something that is still a mystery. It has to be the geophysical core of the Earth that set it in motion. And what happened was that that land that was above this undulating and sort of newly alive Earth, it began to crack and separate. And in an area that today we can still recognize was sort of at the heart of Pangaea is Africa. And off of what we would call South Africa today began to come out this huge landmass, wide as the United States. And over about the next 100 million years, it kept going south, south, south. That whole time, it was tropical, it was hot. They know this from botanists and various other scientists studying the soil where they have had the ice melt, and they've been able to go down into Antarctica where it is now at the South Pole. And they have realized that in that whole southern trip, that this huge continent took down past the equator, going further and further and further south. And then finally, about 34 million years ago, it is at the South Pole. It is tropical. There are ferns. There probably were dinosaurs on it at one point. Something happened, and it is not understood at all what happened. But where it had been hot, it began to start cooling. The cooling went on for a million years, so that by 33 million years ago, there were 2 miles of ice on Antarctica. That hadn't happened anywhere else in the world. It only happened there. And in that 34 to 33 million years, another huge mystery, why did this happen in Antarctica? You come to a question that when I first met Spartan One, one of the first things he said to me, Linda, do you know when Antarctica was free of ice, where all of these huge 62-acre sites, 80 feet high ceilings, mile to 2 mile long corridors, when could it have been built? And I remember saying to him, I have been doing research, and I have found that if you go back 34 million years, it was completely free of ice, and it was hot, and that it is a huge mystery of what happened when the ice began to build up. So if we're dealing with extraterrestrials and we don't fully understand their technology, could they ever have built huge 62-acre sites with all of these high ceilings and miles of corridor? Could they have built it when the ice came? Would they have such technology? We don't know. But if not, then 34 million years ago is the last time that Antarctica, and now I'm going to suggest that everybody get a map and start looking at where the McMurdo U.S. base is, and then find the Beardmore Glacier, which is in the Transantarctic Mountains that go completely across the entire continent, and you will start getting into the area that we are talking about, where Spartan 1 was assigned a mission that I'm going to go into. But when you start looking at the map and you see that the area of the Transantarctic Mountains and the Beardmore Glacier, it is still 2 mile deep ice. That is today in global warming. So when I said to him, not knowing where he was going to take me in this interview that is in the documentary in terms of a location, and told him, well, 34 million years ago, there could have been extraterrestrial structures all over this planet. And he looked at me and he said, almost humbly, he is sort of a humble and peaceful man who is capable of all kinds of actions that he has learned in the military. And he said to me quietly, Linda, what right does any human alive today on the surface of the earth have to keep from the world humans that I have walked in these huge structures 2 miles under the ice, and you're saying to me they might be 34 million years old? And I understood, as he asked, he's very intelligent, that he was making that leap that we all need to make to the question, if we are a Homo sapiens civilization on the surface of the earth, and the governments are the ones that are living underground, and they are keeping all the secrets, you still come to that question, what right has any power broker, if they were human, ever had to keep from the knowledge, to keep us from the knowledge, that there are huge, huge structures, more vast and complicated than what we have seen in the Middle East and Egypt? And they have been hiding, hidden from us, 2 miles under ice. And yet there are people in political structures that made choices that we were never to know because the military and the intel agencies have been going down to these locations in Antarctica since at least 1972.
And in my case, in 1988, I was in Auckland, New Zealand, and witnessed a massive airlift going on between New Zealand and McMurdo, presumably it was McMurdo, by the United States Air Force that was causing the whole city to go up, be up in arms because of the noise of these planes coming and going 24 hours a day, a mission that continued unabated for 2 years.
My God.
Yeah. Now, I would like to circle back to something that you've never discussed. I've listened to every interview you've done on this subject, and no one has ever brought this up because I don't think anybody realizes the connection. And that is the Peary-Reese map, which I'm sure you're familiar with.
Yes, and I show some of it in my film, and I show exactly where this thin border is in the Peary-Reese map of what is allegedly Antarctica. And if that's true, Whitley, that was in the 1500s. That knowledge about the borderland of Antarctica could not have been by any current human because in the 1500s it was still deep ice. So it implies some knowledge of land borders that were before the ice came.
Well, exactly. And the length of time involved is unimaginable because those borders, either they were there after long, much more recently than we realize, or that map contains information that almost goes back to what for us would be beyond the beginning of time.
Yeah.
Now, we're going to get a little deeper in just a moment. First, folks, I want you to go to Vimeo or Amazon.com, wherever you buy videos, and go to Amazon Prime or Vimeo, and go to Antarctica Alien Secrets Beneath the Ice, and just rent it, and watch it this evening or whenever you can. This is very, very worthwhile material. It is a superb job of research, and Linda has cracked a case that I know that some people are very, very surprised that this happened. And this is precious material. It's precious knowledge. And it like all of this type of knowledge, it strengthens you and makes you more. We'll be right back. Listen to this amazing excerpt from a recent contactee interview that is present now in the contactee section of unknowncountry.com and available to our subscribers. This is a man describing something that happened to him and his wife in 1966 when they experienced an 11-day encounter with the small gray visitors. And much more. It is one of the most incredible close encounter descriptions ever. And it is from before this experience was widely known, as a result of which these are people telling just their story as they remember it.
They just basically made us open the door for them. And suddenly, you've got monsters, even though they're diminutive, you've got monsters in your house and in your living room. And I was completely terrorized by this. Mary was more, what's the word I'm looking for? More composed than myself.
To hear the whole incredible story, Go to unknowncountry.com right now and click on the subscribe tab and subscribe. You will find much more than just this one contactee interview. There are dozens of contactee interviews. There is the entire run of William Henry's revelations, of Anne Streber's mysterious powers, of Jeremy Vaney's The Experience. There is Dreamland going back all the way to 2004, soon also to 2003. There are meditations. There are the audiobooks of Communion, Transformation, Majestic, The Secret School, and others. It is an incredibly rich experience. Go to unknowncountry.com and subscribe right now. There is nothing, and I do mean nothing, like it in this world or, frankly, any other. We're talking to Linda Moulton Howe. Earthfiles.com is her website. Her new documentary is Antarctica, Alien Secrets Beneath the Ice. Now, Linda, before we went to commercials for the free part of Dreamland, we were talking about the length, the vast amount of time that might have passed since the Piri Reis map could even have been made. Now, is it possible that that map could have been made much more recently? For example, if someone had down-looking radar, the map looks like it was made from above.
Correct.
So maybe what happened here is that someone with advanced technology made that map, and it ended up in our hands, but it was made much more recently. What do you think about this? I mean, you must have thought about it. I know you've thought about it. It's in the documentary. I've seen the documentary, folks, yeah. So I'm not asking a question that I don't sort of know the answer to.
Well, I've always thought it was a very confusing situation, because something that maybe we can insert here is that we know now, I think, it's fair to say that people who have been abducted, or if you want to call them experiencers in interactions with alien intelligences, one of the themes that always comes across if somebody has had a lot of experiences with non-humans is that the non-humans travel in time. And that traveling in time and moving point to point, both in this universe and in and out of what appear to be other dimensions and other universes, means that we have a planet in which we have been kept to Euclidean geometry travel. You get in a car or on a bicycle, and you are moving in a line around a ball, which is the Earth. But it's very clear that physicists that I have talked to who have worked at Area 51 or Wright-Patterson or any of the really advanced labs that have been trying to back-engineer non-human technology, they all know that we are dealing with intelligences that move point to point. Einsteinian physics allows it, that if you can bend space and time by having a control on gravity, you can move point to point. And the word that we've been introduced to as a human civilization in the last 25 years has been the word portal. When I was interviewing Spartan 1 and Spartan 2 in a very, very difficult situation, which we might talk about later, but sticking with the interview, it was Spartan 1 who said that he had been briefed about the portals that already exist on this Earth and have for at least a couple of decades, and that in those portals, you can be in Gakona, Alaska, which he cited as being one of the portal locations on this Earth, possibly built and constructed in collaboration with non-humans, perhaps the same humanoids that he was shown photographs of as being the creators, the builders, the constructors of the advanced and amazing architecture under the ice in Antarctica. And that We have had portal ability from Gakona in Alaska to Hawaii and other places on this planet. If in the 70s or the 80s, we were able to build portals that could move us around our planet, those portals were also constructed so that we could go out into our solar system. And that solar system leap, as I understand it, that Spartan 1's own uncle, also a Navy SEAL, older than Spartan 1, began working on interstellar trade operations in the 1970s, in which we were going in collaboration with some type of humanoid involved with the Antarctica structure and going out into the Milky Way galaxy. Now, with that as part of the context of Spartan 1, his own uncle, talking to him privately and confidentially, then it means that if you can move point to point in portals, you're bending space-time to do it, you also can travel in time backwards and forwards. That, to me, opens up the speculation that the Piri Reis map and any old map that shows borders of land that existed in a time that is different from today, and Antarctica is the one that's the top of that list, maybe it is because non-humans have been interacting with human civilization right from the very beginning, that the manipulation of DNA in already evolving primates, as briefing papers say, that Homo erectus only 2 million years ago, allegedly the first primate stood up called Homo erectus in Africa. Well, 2 million over 34 million, do that as a fraction. Humanity, in a standing up primate, has only been around for 2 million years, while Antarctica was already in the South Pole 34 million years ago and began mysteriously filling up with ice by 33 million. All of that took place that many 30 million years before Homo erectus stood up, and you have to go to 45,000 years ago to get to the crossfade between Neanderthal going out and Cro-Magnon, Homo sapiens, this current model coming in. Think of a planet that already had extraterrestrial civilizations of high advancement for millions of years before there was even a primate that was standing up. And I think that that is the true story. I think that a man from the Defense Intelligence Agency who was retiring after 23 years sought me out through a man who worked for the World Bank. They both were very familiar with my work, which amazed me. And they wanted to have a meeting, and a meeting was set up, and it was another seven-hour meeting. And in that, one of the most memorable statements, and he began the discussion with me, "Linda, our government has proof that three competing in conflict extraterrestrial civilizations have been terraforming and mixing and matching genes on this planet that they consider to be a laboratory for at least 270 million years."
Well,
and
that would not
the time of the dinosaurs, Whitley.
That would not surprise me in the least. I personally live in this conflict. My life unfolds within this conflict. We're going to take a little break for the Free Dreamlanders, and I'm going to talk about that. We will talk about that together in just a few minutes. But do remember, and each time we take a break, I'm going to remind everybody, Antarctica, Alien Secrets Beneath the Ice. Get it on Amazon. Get it on Vimeo. You have to go to Amazon Prime to get it. And be sure to search on Antarctica : Alien Secrets Beneath the Ice. If you just search on Antarctica, it's not going to come up. At least it didn't for me. We'll be right back.
Whitley Strieber became the host of Dreamland in 1998, and he's still the host today. One of the first podcasts, Dreamland has been built into the premier program of its kind, exploring the edge of science and reality. The show's archive on unknowncountry.com dates back to 2004. Dreamland is a treasure unique in the world.
At this point in this commercial, I used to say that you can't subscribe because we are still in our old website, but that has changed at last. UnknownCountry.com's new website is available. Go to UnknownCountry.com and take a look. It is beautiful. It offers a huge archive, weekly chats, a free message board, all kinds of great stuff. Whitley Strieber audiobooks for subscribers, and much, much more. New stuff coming on the site all the time. So go to unknowncountry.com, take a look, and really open your mind. How do you do that? By subscribing and exploring and having a great time.
Earthfiles.com is Linda Moulton Howe's great website, offering news of the edge of science and reality. Keep up with Linda's work every single day on earthfiles.com. A new world is coming. Whitley has just finished his book about what it's like to live with and communicate with the visitors. He's been doing this for the past 30 years, and since 2015, the intensity of it has exploded. So be among the first to know what living with them is really like and what it will be like for more and more of us in the future. A new world, unforgettable.
It's now available in paperback on Barnes & Noble and Amazon.com, often at your local retailer. It's available as an ebook essentially everywhere in the world that ebooks are sold. We're talking to Linda Moulton Howe about Antarctica and the deep, distant human past. And a moment ago, there came up a subject, which is the state of conflict that exists, which is the reason I think that our planet isn't open to the wider world, that there are different agendas and different ideas basically about what to do with us and what we are for. Now, I learned over the years in my close encounter experiences that there was a significant amount of difference between the way I was treated in by different entities, some of which did not have my best interests at heart at all. And in my book, A New World, I go into a little bit of this difference. But there was at Crabwood in England a few years ago, some years ago now, a remarkable formation, crop formation appeared. It was a sort of alien face and a disc, which when decoded from binary, which was the simple binary language on the disc like we use in computers, it said essentially that there is good out there and beware those bearing gifts. We have not been wary of those bearing gifts. And you can see, if you look in the patents that the United States Navy has recently, if you look at Whitley's journal, I talk about the fact that the Navy has been patenting technology for some time now that I think it's clear comes from somewhere else. In other words, they have accepted the gifts. I have not done that. That's why I'm kind of in an outsider here. They're not hundreds of people flocking to my presentations at conferences and going and spending $1,000 a pop to go out and visit the alien, have alien contact with me. But there is a dark, deep, rich, warm strain here, like an underground river, that there is somebody who is there, who does have our best interests at heart. Now, I want to ask you this, Linda. Mm-hmm. What impression do you have from the two whistleblowers of the state of our relationship with whatever is under that ice?
They are confused. And this comes even from Spartan 1, who his mission in August of 2003 as a Navy SEAL, very highly trained, I would give anything to have him be able to stand by me on television, radio, and in conferences and tell the whole world what he did for 20 years for this country as a Navy SEAL and was known for the work that he did by one of the administrations and was honored secretly. He's an amazing, amazing person. And he told me that one of his greatest confusions was he assumed that if he was now in Antarctica on an extraction mission, is what they call it, where his assignment was to go to a very specific latitude and longitude, and he was told and briefed how he would see a black octagonal structure that was actually the ice had melted around it, and he would be able to see it. But if you did not know the latitude and longitude, you would not know where to go. And he found himself going down inside of this big black octagonal structure, and then to a long ramp, and then to another octagonal black structure, then to another long ramp, another. There was not a stair, step, anywhere. And that when he got down to where he was to contact a scientist who had been assigned to go into these big black basalt structures where the walls glowed as you moved in them, everything alive with energy and clearly self-activating software, that when he finally got to the scientist told him that he was not ready to be extracted because the symbols and the hieroglyphs that were, and this is the word, how were they made? There were thousands in dense, heavy, black basalt. And when they used laser measurements to go, they would point them into the crevices of these immensely detailed, beautiful symbols and hieroglyphs. Every single one was 7 centimeters in. And the scientist talking to Spartan 1 said, we don't have a clue how this was done, and I don't want to leave before I understand more that we are dealing with symbols that seem to be, in one case, something like Mayan. In another case, they seem to be something like Egyptian. And the scientist resisted being extracted. Well, in the process of that discussion, and it's true that Spartan 1 left without taking the scientist. The scientist prevailed. But he asked me, he said, Linda, I would like to understand which of the ETs that you have reported about, the reptiles, the standing up tall blondes, the tall whites, the grays, blues, oranges, there's this menagerie, praying mantises. He said, I didn't see anything in the photographs that I was shown that were like all these others. What I was shown, they had human faces, but there's no hair. No eyebrows, no hair. The cranium going from the ears up seemed to be larger, is the way he described it. But he said they would fit in a crowd of humans, except that I've been told that they are much taller than we are, maybe 7 to 8 feet. It begins to sound to me like the Anunnaki as they were portrayed also in stone and cuneiform long ago as being humanoids that came to this planet and set up in huge pyramids and other big, huge structures. Again, that's where you find huge structures on the planet. Well, what is the link between Anunnaki that allegedly were here thousands and thousands and thousands of years ago before Sumeria? would they, could they have been the ones who built these gigantic structures 34 million years ago, and that the ice covered up, and that that would explain why modern-day human scientists could not find a similarity to or an exact match to what we would call human history symbols and hieroglyphs, not exactly Egyptian, not exactly Mayan, not exactly Sanskrit. Well, because it's a progenitor, it would be the progenitor, that which came long ago and might be, as that DIA guy told me, 270 million years ago. And tying in to your question and his statement to me, three competing extraterrestrial civilizations on this Earth 270 million years ago. Well, maybe one was the humanoid, the Anunnaki, that maybe were 7 to 8 to 9 feet. And when you look at the cuneiform and you look at the stone carvings of Shamash, so-called sun Anunnaki god, and you compare how tall they were to the little humans depicted, they're really twice as big as the humans carved in the stone from long ago. So maybe the Anunnaki type are the ones responsible for all of the architecture deep under the ice in Antarctica. But if so, then who were the other two civilizations that they were in competition with, had perhaps wars with on this planet long before there ever was any standing up primate? And I find this to be not only one of the most fascinating questions to me, Whitley, but the fact that Spartan 1, being assigned to go and extract a scientist trying to study all of those symbols, being shown photographs of humanoids that were defined to him as not from our solar system. And he is the one who says to me, I don't know. I do not know who the other types would be. Nobody has ever briefed me about extraterrestrial civilizations in conflict on this planet. And so I throw it to you, Whitley. Which ones do you think have been in competition and conflict with each other for 270 million years here?
I'm not sure that they've been in how long they've been in conflict. I have no idea about that, but there is certainly conflict. And Free Dreamlanders, when we get back, we're going to talk more about exactly what the dimensions of that are.
Whitley's new book, A New World, is getting great reviews. American cosmic author Diana Walsh-Pasulka says, "Enter this risky new world and leave empowered." New York Times reporter Leslie Keene says, "Riveting. I couldn't put it down." Amazon reviewers are calling it life-changing, mind-opening, the first real description of what contact is like and will be like. Don't miss A New World. As Professor Jeffrey Kripal says in his preface, this book is contact. Get A New World today. Available as a paperback, a hardcover, and an ebook wherever books are sold. And as an audiobook read by Whitley on Audible.com.
This is a brief excerpt from an interview with two contactees who had an 11-day close encounter experience in 1966 and are now willing to speak about it, really, for the first time. To hear their whole interview and many others, subscribe to unknowncountry.com. Here's the excerpt. Did you see the man's face?
Yes, actually, that one is very clear to me. It was kind of longish, and he didn't look completely human, but because he had very, very thin hair, almost non-existent, but he was young. I believe that it was kind of blonde, and he was very tall, like at least 6 feet, and he was so thin that
he looked kind of strange.
And what happened then?
Well, he wanted me to go with him, or to stay with him. He wanted me to stay with him on the ship. And I'd been married for 6 months, and I wasn't about to go running off to stay on the ship.
Now, surely you want more. You must want more. And there is more. Not only this contactee interview, but many others, many of them just as extraordinary, on unknowncountry.com, plus everything else that we offer, my audio books, the meditations, the talks on the key, William Henry's wonderful revelation show and its entire run, Anne Streber's brilliant and magical mysterious powers, and so much more. Hours and hours of listening pleasure. Learn from the meditations on the site. Really learn, because they're real and they're valuable. Subscribe to unknowncountry.com right now. Go to unknowncountry.com. Click on the subscribe tab. We are running very low on new subscribers now, and that should not be. It should not be happening. So you do it. You go there and you do it today. We're talking today to Linda Moulton Howe. Her website, earthfiles.com, her new documentary, Antarctica, Secrets Beneath the Ice, available on Amazon Prime and on Vimeo. We have been talking about this mysterious sense of conflict that in some way keeps us in the state we're in, which is that we're isolated from knowing the truth here, and not only knowing the truth, but from taking advantage of what would appear to be breathtaking technologies and skills. Linda was describing very precise carvings in basalt. The only things that we have in our world that approach that are very old objects from Egypt, from ancient Egypt. There's nothing else. But I hasten to add, there are other stone-related technologies, such as the rock-melting technology that was used by the Incas that we no longer possess, but those technologies are relatively well-known. Isn't known as at all are technologies like we see in the Tic Tac, or it wasn't known. It's become obvious that the U.S. Navy has made a breakthrough. And by the way, folks, how this is going to work out, probably play out, is the Navy is eventually going to announce that it does have this technology, and the media, and it will say that we invented it, and the media will immediately forget the entire history of UFOs and say it was us all along, ignoring the fact that we did not have this technology in 1945, in 1975, or even in 1995. But there is a wealth of information and citing information from those times. And just as happened with the crop circles, the UFO phenomenon in their hopeful world will simply go away. The media will have solved the problem. It's always us. It was us from the beginning. And ha, 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 those idiots who get abducted, they're just a bunch of screaming memes. I don't know if anyone remembers that phrase, but I still use it. Now, I know of conflict between the grays, the blondes, and another group which is not as invested in the physical, that it moves in and out of the physical and in and out of different forms very easily. And it is this group that I am most interested in my life. And how do you, when you read my books and I talk about living a life with building a strong soul, that's what I'm talking about. This is who you will encounter. The grays and the others will lose interest in you, because they're not interested in strong souls. They're interested in weak souls. But we're going to, and the reason is that they can make use of those souls. And I think, Linda, that you know a good deal about this process of making use of souls, and therefore also a good deal about the reason that this base or whatever it is there and what is being done by what comes out of it. We'll be right back. Or no, free listeners, we won't be right back. Gosh, we've reached the end of our hour together. I do hope you subscribe and listen to more of these shows. This is really extraordinary stuff.
You've been listening to Dreamland. Be sure to tune in again next week. Dreamland is brought to you by UnknownCountry.com and its family of subscribers. Unknown Country was founded by Ann Streber. Our news editor is Matthew Frizzell. Our coordinator is Amy Safrankova. Whitley Streber is your Dreamland host, and I'm your announcer, Ted Alexander. Thank you for listening.